This is Money Roots, the podcast where Amy Irvine and her team keep money conversations real, relatable, and rooted in your goals. Let's grow together.
Hello, Money Root listeners. Amy Irvine, CEO and founder of Rooted Planning Group here. And in today's podcast, we are going to be talking about the journey of an entrepreneur. That would be my journey, actually. And today we're going to turn the tides of this interview onto me, not away from me. It's not one of my most comfortable positions to be in, but I think there's a lot to learn when you hear other people's journey just in general. And so since it was 10 years ago, 2015, that I officially launched my independence into this profession after having worked in it for 20 years plus, we thought it would be interesting thought you might be interested in listening or learning about the journey of what is now called Rooted Planning Group. So Kate, take it away.
Well, Amy, I'm so honored you asked me to be the one to interview you. And I think that I know a lot of your journey and the backgrounds, and I've known you through that time period. I also thought it would be interesting for people to get the background. And as you said, learning what it takes to become a business owner and what gets you there. So we're going to dig into your journey a little bit. And to start off, just as a foundation, in case the listeners don't know, can you give us a quick, brief background of your, as I say, Amy had some wonderful positions and experience before launching the firm, but what your experience had been leading up to the point that you left and launched on your own?
Well, I mean, digging back to like, people will often ask, like, did you go to college for this career? And the answer is yes, I did, but it wasn't a direct route by any way, shape, or the form. I graduated the first time from college with an accounting degree. And I learned very quickly that accounting has many facets, right? Just like any career has many facets. And I learned pretty quickly after a short stint of working for a transit company that I liked finance more than I liked accounting. So the numbers of it, I loved, but the finance side was definitely something I enjoyed more than like the accounting, the widget side, I guess you want to say. And I happened to very fortunately, although accidents, I guess you can say, happen in a positive way in this situation, but I happened to fortunately fall into a job for a very small trust company as an admin. They were looking for an admin. The job itself looked very interesting. And that really is what launched my career because it got me into that world, and it was Intuit Trust. So it's a bank. The bank doesn't exist anymore. It was absorbed by Community Bank, but it was called Steuben Trust Company. But then they had this trust department, and the trust department did estate work. It did investment work. It did tax work. So, you know, what we now know today and think back in 1994, this wasn't terminology. Financial planning wasn't anywhere near what it is today. And holistic financial planning, you just didn't hear it back then, very rarely. So, but that's what they were doing. And so I kind of got a glimpse into that world, and it led to working for a union benefit office for about 2-year period of time where I really got to explore that even further. And one thing that I realized when I was working for that organization was that I really liked helping people too. It wasn't just the numbers. It was also the problem solving. It was, you know, at that point in time, it was the Carpenters Union, and they didn't have any women. So it was all men, and they would come in and they would ask a lot of finance questions and things about their pension or their, what they call annuity or their health benefits. And the language, which I had acquired, was still very foreign. And I thought, oh, okay. Like, you know, this isn't something everybody is taught in school. It's not something that comes natural to a lot of people. And it was that helping component that really led me to the next step, which was working for a larger trust company. And within that larger trust company, Chemung Canal Trust Company, it was a big, bigger trust company. And they had all those different departments that we deal with in people's lives, tax, investments, retirement, estate planning, like all of that was included. And that's what led me to go back to college and get my degree, my bachelor's degree in financial planning, and where you and I met, right? Mm-hmm. So I had been working in the profession for a number of years at that point in time, and you were going to college the first time. And they had just started the CFP program at our alma mater. And so I went back for basically 2.5 years, if you count the internship, which cracked me up. If you count the internship, then it was 2.5 years, and got my bachelor's degree in there, and actually continued on for a few more years at, with classes to get my master's degree, but then went to work in a for a credit union in their investment management and financial planning department. That was a bit different than all the other places that I had worked before, because it really fell into what they call the broker-dealer world. And prior to that, I had always worked, you know, you heard me say trust company, benefits office, trust company. I'd always worked in what's called the fiduciary world. And in other words, you know, it was something that we did get paid based on the assets that we managed, but it wasn't a broker-dealer world. It wasn't a commission world. Mm-hmm. And for those 5 years that I worked for the credit union, and I'm not saying that this is a bad thing, I'm just saying this is the difference. For those 5 years that I worked at the credit union, it was in that sort of broker-dealer world. It was very different. It was, it wasn't as planning focused. It just, it wasn't my thing. And so I shifted back into the fiduciary world, working for an RIA in Corning, another, firm in Corning, and did that for a few years, all while doing, you know, like getting the CFP designation. And once I graduated from college, and as you know, Kate, I'm like this curious person, right? So once I get one designation, it's not because I feel like I should have all these initials after my name. It's just, I'm just so curious about this. Mm-hmm. So I haven't stopped learning since the moment that I graduated the first time, right? I've just kept on with my education journey, and we can get into some of the other designations that I hold, but it was in 2015 that I just was like, you know, every place I've worked has always been assets, assets, assets. And at that point in time, I was 44 years old. The year before that, in 2014, Brent and I had lost some significant family members that were really quite young, especially my uncle. He was a year older than Brent, so pretty darn young. And it just, it makes you realize something, right? It's, I loved what I did, but I didn't love how I was doing it. And I had searched and searched and searched for other firms to see, you know, what else is out there? Could I work for something, somebody else? And finally, I just decided, no, there actually isn't anything else out there that I could find that was, at that point in time, we're talking 2014. So, you know, we certainly weren't as global as we are today, but I just couldn't find what I was looking for. So at some really hard pushing and encouragement from my husband, and because of what had happened in 2014 and losing those significant others, in a conversation that my husband and I had on a walk, when I said to him the question that I've always asked, if money wasn't a barrier, what would you change in your life? He made the mistake of saying, I wouldn't mind being where it's warmer in the winter. And so I was like, okay, I would really love to work with more Gen X professional women, because there was a lot that were coming to me. They were asking a lot of questions, but nobody would work with them because they didn't have enough assets to manage. They had fantastic saving skills. They had put a lot of money in their 401ks. They had lots of complexity in their planning, but nobody would take them on. I wanted to take them on, right? I wanted to work with them. So I looked at it from that perspective and said, okay, well, what if I charge? There was a very, very, very small fraction of people in the profession that were charging what's called a flat fee. And I thought, okay, well, that's what I'll charge. You know, I'll just charge this flat fee for the services that they want. Now, I charged too little when I first started, but that's a whole nother subject.
That'll be for part two and learning lessons.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, lessons. Right. So it was, you know, that idea of, okay, let's spend a couple of months, 3 or 4 months down in Florida, and also let's help this group of individuals that nobody else seems to be helping, and have this, you know, it, have me doing the things that I am, that I love. I always knew that I didn't want to do it alone. And that was actually one of the barriers for me, was that I was terrified to do something on my own. And not because I didn't think I had the skill for it, but because everything that you hear and read and see and you're told, it's, you know, it's this idea of, well, what if something happens to you? Or, you know, like, you know, you don't have a backup to your clients, which is always one of my fears. But it was also all the complexities of starting a business in this profession are huge. They're huge complexities. And in today's world, fast forward 10 years, there's a lot more out there to help you get that business up and running. But when I did it, it wasn't.
No, so, I will interject that when I was at a turning point, you'd kind of mentioned, Amy, that not many people were doing it like this. And I knew the way I wanted to plan. It had been presented by more of the financial planning world, but trying to figure out how to do that was very difficult. And my words were, I think Amy's doing something. but that'll come later. So we kind of covered a little bit of like what led you to taking that first step, which was more lifestyle, family, thinking about what you wanted and the way you wanted to work. What were some things that you did to prepare for the transition?
Yeah, well, Brent and I kind of made the decision in late 2014. I actually approached the gentleman that I worked for and asked him, would you ever let me work remotely for a couple of months out of the year? And would you let me sort of have this subset of clients that I would really like to work with? And we got the feeling that he said he would think about it, but we got the feeling that that probably wasn't going to ultimately be what was going to happen. So we started saving, right? So we looked at all of our spending. We looked at everything that was going on and we went like bare bones. We went down to like, you know, we cut a lot of stuff off. We really cut back significantly, knowing that, you know, we're probably going to make a change. But I also started working with a company that was meant to like match people up, right? It's almost like not a recruiter, but it's like a matching service. And I knew what I wanted to do, what I was good at, what I wanted to do. And I was hoping that maybe somebody else out there also had a desire to do something so we could almost like partner. And they did find a company out there that happened to be in Florida. So it was like, it seemed like all of the stars were aligned. That's what it seemed like. And Brent and I were exploring. We were talking to this other company. We went down and did a due diligence visit. And we hired a company that actually did like due diligence on both of us and sort of brought a report together and all of that sort of stuff. And it seemed like all the stars were aligning. And I was rereading a book recently called The Upside of Down. And the book is like, you know, we all have what's called failing well situations in our lives, where successful failures, however you want to call the phase. And I was rereading that book recently, and it's amazing when you read it at some point in time in your life, you interpret things one way, and then you read it at another point in time of life, and you read it a whole nother way. But one thing that stood out to me this recent time was they said failure is sort of a junk drawer of a word. And I thought that was really interesting because we dump all sorts of meaning into it, right? And when something goes wrong, we sort of pull that word failure out of the drawer and say that was a failure. And the reason that I bring that up is because that initial step that I took to go independent in 2015 was that sort of event, right? So I gave my notice in May of 2015, April, May of 2015, and officially became an independent RIA with another person in May of 2015. So 10 years ago, like I said, did all the due diligence, thought I did all my homework, you know, is that preparation was there. Like I said, Brent and I sort of, you know, looked at, okay, well, what's bare bones? What can we live off from? What can we cut back? What do we need to save for? You know, all, and we'd always been savers too. So it wasn't like we didn't have a good chunk of money set aside. What I learned was I didn't have enough. I mean, we made it, but it was a bit of a struggle. We thought we had cut back to bare bones. Let me rephrase what I said to you. We thought we had cut back to bare bones.
Yes.
What we learned was we had to cut back more. And you can live off from very little if you try hard. And we actually ended up renting a place in Florida, and we had our place in New York. Fortunately, didn't have a mortgage at that time. I know we wouldn't have been able to make it if we tried at that point and didn't. But we decided that we were going to, you know, give it a try. And it just, it was definitely a challenge that first few months, because it was just, even the money was there, but we could see it going very quickly. And I said, if it keeps going at this rate, you know, we're not going to have the full year lead time that we thought we were going to have. And then to make matters worse, within probably about 4 months, we could see that this new journey that I was on was in the junk drawer. The word was in the junk drawer. It was not what I thought it was going to be. It was not the stars aligning that I thought that it was going to be. And so in November, December of 2015, we all sat down at the table and agreed, like, this isn't going to work. Yeah. So in a way, it forced me to really go down the path that, I don't like to use the word should or probably, but it forced me to go down this path of, I guess, another phrase that sometimes people say, this accident that happened, right? This path of, oh no, she's actually starting her absolute own firm, the founding member of this firm. And at the time, I will be completely honest to say that I almost had a nervous breakdown is not an exaggeration. Like, the amount of stress that I felt during that period of time, because I had left an established firm. I had gone into this joint venture with somebody in a different state. I was living in both states. And within 6 months, I'm breaking up with this other person, and for lack of a better word, and I'm starting my own firm. The biggest barrier was what I had going on in my head, right? Because I was thinking, oh, that's it. Everybody that I brought with me is just going to leave. They're going to look at the situation and they're going to say, she doesn't know what she's doing. I'm out of here. And along the way, now I don't have this, like, I'm not joint expenses. Now I've got 100%. So that's why I said we thought we had set enough aside, but in reality, oh gosh, we really didn't, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, plans changed and you had to pivot and adjust.
We had to pivot, which is a word that we've used many times in our firm. Is it not, Kate?
We have. I think with clients and with ourselves, sometimes things change that we need to adjust. You used the word a minute ago, struggle with the financial piece and not even running out, but also I'd imagine the mindset around being a saver and then having to turn around and use those savings, and also being someone that, as a friend, I will call you a high achiever, that you've now, I can only imagine, we're second guessing your pathway and, you know, now to look back to realize what kind of decision it was. But at that moment, I just had to imagine it was very difficult. I think everyone expects struggles the first year, and certain things you plan for, like financial, is usually one of the biggest. Are there any struggles you encountered that either stand out to you or were surprising?
Yeah. I mean, the struggles certainly were financial, but much, much more emotional. I think that that's one of the biggest things. And you and I see it in clients that do decide to start their own business, that emotional struggle, it's pretty large, right? So you go from that steady paycheck to the irregular cash flow. You go from, you know, knowing that you're okay. And that, you know, if you have a sick day, like, you know, somebody's going to cover for you for, I don't have anybody backing me up. You have a lot of that sort of thing. And so that first year was emotional. Most businesses fail in the first year. And that's what I kept thinking to myself, this business is like, I'm out, I'm done. What am I going to do? You know, and a friend of mine really helped me in that phase, because, you know, I was upset with making the decision that I had made, upset with myself, definitely questioning myself. And my friend said, Amy, what's the worst that's going to happen? Like, if this doesn't work, what's the worst that's going to happen? I said, I'm just going to have to go get a job. And she said, that's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to have to go get a job? She said, like, that's a pretty good thing. She said, you know, I mean, give yourself a year. And I reset the clock just a little bit with that year timeframe, because having to get the business up and running. So at the first name of our business, which is the legal name of our business, was Irvine Wealth Planning Strategies. That was a strategy, truly a strategy, because I honored it. I had a non-solicit agreement with the prior firm that I worked with, and I would not solicit clients. but I needed people to know that I was out there, right? Right. So I named the company Irvine Wealth Planning Strategies because, number one, planning and strategies were super important names that I wanted in the name of the company. And then in addition to that, I needed them to have my name. And in the state of New York, if you use words like financial and that sort of thing, it actually slows down the process. And I Yes. needed to like speed this process up as much as possible. And as it was, the official business launch of Irvine Wealth Planning Strategy wasn't until May of 2016. So it actually took about 3 to 4 months to fully get the business up and functional, get all of the documents filed. Fortunately, during that period of time, the partnership was such that I did continue to do some business and I was able to, you know, build a little bit knowing that I would take all those clients with me for anybody that I did. So I was fortunate that, you know, we could see that it wasn't going to work, but we could also see that that wasn't like, it wasn't, there wasn't animosity, right? Okay. So I was able to continue to have a little bit of revenue and a little bit of income, but it was still pretty darn tight. And because I expected to be much further along by true year one, so in May of 2016, I was way behind where I had anticipated. Even in like the worst case scenarios, I was way behind where I anticipated. So then once I launched Irvine Wealth Planning Strategies, again, I felt like I was whole new year all over again. Like it was all, and now I had to take on things that I was not skilled in, like marketing, still not skilled in, you know, but I had to figure out how do I market this thing? I had to think about, you know, all the technology where in my past life, this was something I always had somebody to bounce it off from. I always had somebody to approve it. I always had like this, you know, system that I plugged right. into. Right. And I was fortunate to have a what's called a study group to once I launched, I was fortunate to have this group, but leading up to the launch, I didn't. And so all of those decisions were left up to me. And that was one of my biggest struggles, I guess, as you say. But a lot of it was emotional. A lot of it, I think back to those days and I think, wow, that was an awful lot. People don't talk about it. They talk about their successes, right. you know, and how they got there. But man, I will tell you the emotional struggles that I had going on. I would lay in bed at night and think of, you know, okay, how do I do this? And how do I do that? And how do I do this? And I just had a lot going on in my head. And if you could envision like one of those cartoons where there's like a bubble over the head and you see like, like all these words and equations, right? Like, and like, think of like a bottle or a thing of yarn that's like all messed up, right? There's no order to it. Well, that's what was going on. And I was worried. I was really worried about the business succeeding. Some of it, to be honest, was an ego thing. Like, I don't want to fail. You know, I don't want people like, you know, I told her she would fail kind of thing. Yes. So a piece of it was that. But the other piece of it was I wanted this business model to succeed because I believed in it. I believed that was the way of the future. And very fortunately, over the course of the next year, it was successful. And it was a model that people were really interested in. And because I was charging a lot less than I should have, it was a little too successful, which was my next struggle.
Well, I was going to turn around and say that you mentioned people mentioned the successes, and I'm going to use an Amy Irvine quote on you in when people are talking about starting out or asking you questions. And I've heard you multiple times say, everyone plans to fail, but you need to plan on what if it succeeds.
And you know, I didn't do that. That's one thing that I was so worried about failure. I was just really so worried about failure that I couldn't look to the other side. I just wanted to survive, right? Survive. I mean, I had a plan.
I was thinking of survival, like your base instinct of I have to survive.
Yeah. I just wanted to survive during that time. And it's like, to me, that's so weird now because when I'm working with clients, I'm like, okay, but what if this works? Like first thing out of my mind, right? What if this works? And what's it going to look like? But when it was me in the moment of stress, all I could think about was I do not want to put my family in this fight. I don't want to, you know, ruin the financial strength of our family because of something that was so unusual at the time, you know? So it was, those are the lessons that I learned and that I now try to pass along to other people that are starting their own business. And I think the other biggest thing was truly, now there's lots of people to talk to. There really wasn't anybody doing what I'm doing. But I think for other people that are thinking about launching their own business in something that they're familiar with, if you can get out there and just talk to a lot of people, do some research without breaching any confidentiality or anything like that. I wish I had had more people to talk to. I wish I had a lot more people to talk to. So I would have been able to maybe do a little bit more homework before I went into it. Now, I don't regret anything. My grandmother once said, there's a difference between regret and wanting things to change, right? So I don't regret anything because I learned so much from every avenue I've taken, every street I've gone down, it's taken me down a different learning experience. And so I don't regret it. I do wish that there was a more direct route sometimes.
That's how we learn our lessons, unfortunately. They're not usually the easy way. I know we've gone on for a little while, and I think we could continue to go on for a long time. Might be a good transition point into the next part of your story, because by the time that you and I encountered each other again, I think the business had turned around or was definitely at a new point where things were starting to change. So you can share more next time on what the next stage of the journey look like.
The fall of 2017, when Kate and I reconnected at a football game for our collective nephews.
A moment of, I don't know, serendipity, I think. Yes.
Oh, thank God. I was praying, and I will say to you that that was one of the moments that I feel like a prayer was truly answered. So yeah, I'll share more about that. And part two. Well, we hope that you've enjoyed this time with Kate and I. Stay tuned for part two of this podcast and the journey that I've walked down as a business owner and the structure of the business and some of the changes. Talk about pivot. Some of the changes that we've made over the course of, since the end of 2017 into now. It's something that I think a lot of people don't realize when they look at the business structure as it is right now. So I look forward to sharing more of that. And Kate, thank you for being gentle on me with your questions. I do appreciate it. If you'd like to know more about our services, you can hop on over to rootedpg.com and also schedule a discovery call with us on a schedule a discovery call page. We, again, hope that you've enjoyed this, and we'd love to know if you'd like other particular podcast episodes on different topics. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Money Roots. Until next time, keep your finances grounded and your future growing.